And so it's a wonderful opportunity to really just explore a little bit. You know, Kriyananda was given the name bliss through Kriya, yoga, bliss, union, through Ananda being bliss and Kriya being the technique. But also not just a technique. It's Kriya actually means to do. It means action. So it's from the same root as, you've probably heard of karma yoga.
Mm-hmm.
In Raja Yoga, you talked about that. Karma yoga, it's that service, it's that action that you're doing without the fruits, so that you're just purely giving that energy to God or to the God in others, and you're clear. So karma yoga is a little bit like Kriya. And Kriya yoga, it's a technique, but it's also a path, which is very important to remember, because it encompasses, you studied Raja Yoga, and it's all those pieces. It's the path, not only of Raja Yoga, but also how Kriya Yoga is. It incorporates all the parts of our body and mind and soul and outward life and inward life. And the blessing, you know, I wrote down the very same thing to talk about, which was Yogananda said the path is 25% the guru, the devotee's effort, 25% the guru's effort on the devotee's behalf, and 50% the grace of God. But it also says that 25% of the devotee's effort is 100% of what we can do. You know, so it's not just, oh, I'll give it 20, 25%. You know, it's just a little bit that I give. No, the more we give to it of our energy, 100% is what it will draw the guru, the guru's grace. And when those two are operating in together, that magnetism draws that grace of God that leads us to final liberation. It was interesting to me to read this, because he said, you know, the devotee's part, that's doing the techniques, a large part. It's having the right attitude, of course, as we learned in Raja. But the technique that we're starting, you guys are preparing to do, is the deepest technique that Yogananda brought. It's a technique, as you remember in reading from the AY on Kriya Yoga, Lahiri Mahasaya said, when people would come to him, they would come to him, I've got this problem, I need money, I need wife, I need whatever, rickshaw, I don't know what they had in those days, but I need job, I need these things, or I have this problem. They would come to him and say, please help me, you're my guru. And he would say, do your Kriya, it will solve all your problems. We were just in a Kriya Satsang group last night, and these are people who've been doing Kriya a little while, and
actually, it was a sadhaka group.
It was a sadhaka prep group, and they're just people who've been around a little longer doing Kriya and walking the path. And we were saying, so let's talk about Kriya. How's it doing for you? How's your sadhana going? And around the room, they were saying, I have a little trouble with this one, that thing, this technique. Viraj was leading them through, Hong sawing very carefully and asking, how does that work? What questions do you have? Just giving that time to focus on sadhana. And one of the ladies said, oh, what's my favorite technique? You asked me, Kriya Yoga is my favorite technique. You know what? I am finding it solves every problem I have. If I sit down with something and I do my Kriyas, I don't have it anymore. I don't have that problem. And she was just saying how much better she felt, and it was just working so well. She just loved it so much.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Does that mean that internally the emotional or thought process of a worry went away, or is it literally like manifested in her life, the problem really did disappear?
Both. Because your magnetism changes. Because see, you know, that bar magnet, it mentioned the way an unmagnetized iron is just the molecules are just facing all whatever way they do. You know, that's just the way iron is. But as soon as you shoot the electricity through it, or it gets next to another strong magnet, all those molecules turn in one direction and go in one direction, north and south. So then you can work with that energy that's been going out, you know, into worries, dissipated into worries and low energy, not being able to do the things necessary to make the manifest, the what you need, all those things that are sort of holes in the bucket of our energy. Well, those things, turning all around, they start up and down, north and south. Then we've got a connection going on. We've got the magnet of the guru who's always waiting with us, by our side, working with us. And then we've got our effort of, I'm going to do this technique that's going to bring my energy up. And you've got the power, you've got the blessing of the guru in the technique. You've got his presence with you. And then you do the work. And all the little vrittis start to say, ooh, there's this really strong magnet really close to me. I think I'll follow it. And then they go up. So all those, you know, the neutralization of the, you know, this world is made of duality. So there's always an up with a down anytime you're out in the world. But there's one state of, there's one way to get beyond the duality. It works sometimes, it doesn't work sometimes. I'm happy, I'm sad, all of that. And that state that doesn't have a dual is bliss. So that's one of the reasons the masters tell us bliss is the goal, ananda is the goal. That state of unconditioned joy, all the time joy. So that's where we're headed. And kriya, and it's a, you know, it's a step by step. We don't know how much karma is in there. We don't know how many of these vrittis are there, you know, and
probably a few.
You know, probably a few. And they say lifetimes and lifetimes we've been doing these things, and they've all been, you know, doing their thing. So they've got a certain energy that they're going with their desires. I have to have this. I really need that. Pulling us out of our center of contentment and, you know, focus. So they have to, you know, be drawn in. And that magnet inside the center of the spine, you know, we're practicing doing Hong Sa in the spine. That's to prepare ourselves for this pathway, which is the pathway of Kriya. When you do the technique, it'll be going in that pathway. And we're getting to know it a little bit, shaking your hands with it. And the technique is a strong way to draw the energy more. It just intensifies your sadhana. Really, what you're doing, you're feeling some peace in meditation, whatever way you're feeling those aspects of God, more joy, more peace, more calmness, more love, more glimmering, seeing the light or feeling light, you know, like that. All those things are signs that the meditation is starting to take us in. Now with Kriya, it just expands. It makes the magnet more powerful. It's the electric current that's bigger. And you know when you see, I loved it when I saw a picture some years ago now. I don't keep up with the latest science all that much with magnets. I know that with their electromagnets. There was a huge electromagnet in this picture that I saw. And there was a big, heavy, two-ton car right down here. And this magnet came over like this, and that two-ton car was just, I thought it was amazing to me. But I started to see, you know, magnets are very powerful. They can really do a lot. So the guru's magnetism is, he's like here, and he's like that electromagnet. He's a divine magnet, which is stronger than anything I saw in that picture by multitudes. But, you know, we're sort of offering our energy up to that. You know, like we can think of us as the two-ton car. We've got karma that's pretty heavy. I don't know. Sometimes I think of myself as having, you know, like a heavy kind of thing that's holding me down that I can't just lift up in meditation with the way I want to. So, you know, I focus on the guru, and that magnet, it makes it so much easier for all those things to get burned up. And when we are flowing in free energy with a pure heart, and that energy's flowing through us, you look at people who are successful, you look at great souls, they have so much energy. I'm always inspired by how much energy flows through them. I want more of that energy to flow through me. And when I do Kriya regularly, and when I do a few more than I'm used to, when I go on retreat or something, whew, I can feel my energy get so much bigger. I know it's working. And then I come back, and you know, we all have our things. I get involved in a project. I think it's so important. I don't meditate as much. You know, we all have this. We're just doing our best. But the power of this technique is starting to come for us. And I love the part it said, you can't just get there by love. This was a lesson for me. Because for me, when I feel closest to God, it's when I'm in a loving relationship. I love you. I feel your love. That's enough. Mm-hmm. Why do anything else? But here it's like, that's good, but if you want to be liberated, if you want to really get all those little vrittis burned into the light, if you want to have that energy like a saint and help other people or whatever it is your goal is, if you want to have that big energy, it's more than just love. And that's where the techniques come. It's the work that we do. And it's a blessing that the Guru has given it to us to do the work. And with that 25% and his 25%, the grace of God, and what we're doing is cooperating with that grace. You know, we're not just sitting there going, okay, come on over, grace. You know, we'd like, I love you, you love me, come on over, change my life, make me get bigger, stronger, more successful. No. We have to raise our energy. That becomes the magnet. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. We learn in energization. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. It's like that electric current. Our will is drawing in that energy and drawing it up. And that is the electric current that we're generating as we're doing it. And the greater the flow of energy, like this electric magnet, the reason it's so strong, it's got a lot of electricity flowing through it. And that's energy, isn't it? Electricity is just a form of energy. So that's how you get the really big magnet. You've got that electric, big power energy flowing through. And, you know, you get lifted up. And so it's both end. And it's always good for me to remember anew, not so much a scientific technician, but when I'm reminded why I do my practices, it helps me keep the discipline up to do it, you know, because it's easy to get on plateaus and, oh, well, everything's going pretty well, you know, and then usually what happens for most of us, well, a test comes. Oh my gosh, I got to work a little harder here because it's not flowing, or I need something, or my family is sick, or something's going on, and I got to raise my energy. It's like, okay, how do I do that? Yeah. Lahiri Mahasaya, the one who brought us Kriya out of the Himalayas, from Babaji, says, solve all your problems in Kriya. And it doesn't work for everybody who's brand new on the path, but by the time they're where you guys are, you know that right attitude, you know you can't just be selfish and think of yourself, you can't aggrandize your ego because God comes to you. You know, you've got those basic things going. So, yeah, sure.
You know, Steve Jobs, the only book that he had on his iPad was
that amazing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he had, of course, profound some wisdom or insight or the creativity, vision, and he built great things. But then also heard he was so mean, and he had cancer, and that's how he died. Mm-hmm. I wondered, did he ever go to Korea? Did he master his way of Korea?
No.
No, he didn't become a Kriya Bon. He and his wife, I do know this about him, he was married by Rinpoche. So
a Buddhist Rinpoche.
Buddhist Rinpoche. He was trying to have, you know, he was aware of the spiritual life. He was aware. He looked at it in some kind of one way. He drew inspiration from reading about Yogananda by standing next to that magnet in Yogananda's book and reading it every year. My read on this is he was able to get magnetism. And that magnetism helped him draw ideas and good solutions and amazing products. You know, he used it in that way, which has helped mankind some, and I'm sure he's gotten some good karma from that. But, yeah, would, you know, you can extrapolate. Would his life, I mean, I can imagine, might his life have been more balanced? Might he have learned to balance all the parts of his nature so that his loving compassion might have also been that magnetic as his ability to find a product, make a product, run a company? You know, I think it would have helped because, you know, the energy needs to be balanced. You need to bring it up through the chakras. And it's an interesting study of artists, and it's also the place that devotion plays, very important. Many artists, especially in the Renaissance age, art became a really high leading inspirational thing. So there were many great artists, but sometimes those artists would become unbalanced in their minds, their brains. They would have, you know, I think of Van Gogh, you know, you think of others, obvious examples. But they were kind of worshipped, not Van Gogh, but some of the other artists. The society looked up to them. They were wonderful. They were making these beautiful creations. But the energy was stuck here at the medulla. They were drawing in great inspiration and ideas and manifesting beautiful things. But they didn't know to bow their head and bring it here. So all that energy kind of unbalanced a little bit their brain and their thoughts, and it became hard for them to keep a balanced mind, even in those cases of those artists. So it's about balancing, and that's why when you allow yourself to become the child of a guru, which is what a disciple really ends up being, chela is, you know, the word for disciple, it's child of the guru. And you say, okay, I will follow your guidance. I will follow you. And Kriya is a part of that in this line. And Yogananda said, do this and follow me with this. He also said a lot of other things in the teaching. So when sincere people say, I want to follow this master toward my self-realization, you know, they've got some help to balance that big energy that's coming in.
It's not just a technique, it's a whole path.
It's a whole
that
path.
Integrates attitude and all those other
integrates
things.
Integrates attitude, integrates the heart, the love, you know, the compassion, the awareness. You know, there's a book that Swamiji wrote called The Art of Supportive Leadership, and we're studying that in one of our classes now. And it's very simple. It was used by the Kellogg Group. It's like a booklet, and it's just got the essence of the spiritual life for managers, and for anybody who manages anything, including ourselves. It's very deep, and it's very looks very simple, but the Kellogg Company used it for all their managers for quite a while in their training. And I was thinking of that in the room and thinking, you know, it's so easy to get it wrong when there's a lot of energy running through you. It's so easy to get a little off balance. Wow, this thing's so important, you know. Swami starts out with, people are more important than things. When you're a manager, you're there to serve the people. That's your responsibility. And the projects are secondary. The way you have a great project is to give great support to great people. So that's not always everybody's first lesson in management. So people learn, you know, you have to learn how to get the energy and use the energy, channel the energy and focus the energy, and you have to learn to purify the energy away from your own egoic will, or sometimes big energy can blow people away so easily because they're not ready. How do you know if they're ready? And how do you have the self-control not to blow them away when you've got all this energy and they can't really handle that? You know, they can just, and that, you know, you see that in very successful lives sometimes. People get blown away being around them. Even saints, people get blown away being around. But the saint is always thinking of the spiritual well-being of that person. So they're trying to have them be able to relate to them, and they don't let them get lost. They keep them because they're the parent, the loving, perfect parent. Doesn't want their child to get lost or have too many challenges that they can't make, or lose their self-confidence, and all those things. The parents watch for those things in their children, as the Buddha does for us. So, yeah, I think it's wonderful. I think one of the things I'm most grateful to Stephen Jobs for is that he did read that book, and everybody knows, or many people who have known him know about him. He's been a famous person, a very successful person, and he gave that book out at his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard that too. He had people, that's what he wanted people to know. He said, this is what life's about. Become self-actualized is what his actual words were. Self-realized, we would call it. So do this. And he took a piece of it, and he came very far. But he wasn't a self-realized master. He didn't have all the pieces together. He'll come back, I dare say, and maybe, you know, Yogananda will say, hey, Steve, come visit me sometimes, and we will talk about these
I
things.
I wonder who was around back then. In those elaborated, you know, Westerners and all this riches and fame and, you know, all those, like, I don't know. How old was he? Could he be alive in 1920s? I don't know.
Who's Stephen
Jobs?
Yeah.
In the 1950s.
No, he would have been born in the 50s.
Yeah, he was born in the 50s.
So yes,
so
I mean,
he could
have been one of those souls back then.
One of those people who was in the part of the congregation, I don't know.
Well, that's very well possible. I mean, what he said is that people tend to go in spiritual families and they keep being born in those groups,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there is a guru that matches up with a soul,
mm-hmm.
and that guru will take that soul life after life. So, you know, is Paramahansa Yogananda actually Stephen Jobs' guru? It would be a nice thought, because I think Stephen Jobs was a good soul, and I think he did a lot of good, and I would love to think he would have Yogananda as his guru. I don't know.
Well, if he wasn't, though, Yogananda could be taken to his guru.
That's right.
Exactly, and
that's right.
What they do. They all work together. So the fact that he tuned in is rare enough, you know,
mm-hmm.
in our society right now, for somebody who can manifest things, the fact that he kept even that connection to read it every year. Because usually when people's lives get so successful and they're so busy and they've got all this money and all this stuff, they don't think about the spiritual life anymore. They've got too many things happening, and it's fun, you know. He was very simple in his living. He never really got lost in the big boo-boo-boo of being rich and, you know, and all of that. He really didn't seem to get on that bandwagon and lose himself in that. So people are always criticized who are famous. You know, some people were blown away by his management style. I didn't know him personally. But I think it's great. You know, his wife came here to look at our school. They were considering having their children in their school, which would have been great fun.
Here in Palo Alto?
For us here in Palo Alto, this Living Wisdom School that we have just in the building here. They were looking at it. Because they have a spiritual focus. They wanted their children to grow up in that. They chose another school, but they have those values, and that's precious in our time. Very few people of great wealth that I know of really take seriously. It's rare. There's a saying, I don't know how long it will be true, but in the Bible, that it's easier to get an elephant to go through the eye of a needle.
A camel.
Thank you. The camel than it is for a wealthy person to find the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many distractions.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel the need at the time. You know, some combination. Rajasi Janakananda was Yogananda's disciple, and he was a self-made millionaire and a very shining example of what do you do? He found a guru, made all this money, kept making all this money. He'd come to his guru. His guru would say, Rajasi, we need to build something over here. Can I have some money? Oh, sure, Master, I'll give you this money. And he goes away. He'll come back. Rajasi, we need to be doing this. We need to go on this trip, and we need to publish this book. And, you know, no problem, Master. I'll give you this money. And you see this picture of them sitting together. I love this picture. They are both in samadhi, blissed out. And I think this is the one where they're holding hands. They were divine friends from many past lives, and they recognized that when they came together. And he was born. His dharma, his loving gift to his guru, was to be born and live a life where a lot of money came to him, and he supported his guru's work. And that's why his guru's work could really sustain itself. He made that happen.
Is that the white man in the movie Awake, the benefactor? He was the financial...
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay,
that's what
Rajasi Janakananda. Yeah. Well, in Awake. Was he in Awake?
I don't remember his role in Awake, but he must have been had a place there that I just don't recall the stories that they told in that one.
Yeah, he must.
But sure,
because
he was the main financial supporter.
And he was his foremost male disciple then. He gave the work to him. He said, "You govern everything. When I'm gone, you take over." And he only lived a short time. He had a brain thing that took him out. But anyway, and then it would reach a point where I loved the play between the two of them, because it would reach a point where, and Rajasi, he was a businessman. You know, he started all these companies, self-educated. One of the youngest, trained himself to be a CPA. I mean, on and on, legal. He just did it all. He was quite brilliant. And so he wanted, you know, to make sure his money was being spent well. He was he'd go to Yogananda from time to time, and Yogananda would say, "Well, you know, Rajasi, we need money to pay the mortgage again." And he'd say, "What did you do with the last money?" Imagine to your guru, you know. But that was the play they had together. And so he... But,
you don't want to throw good money after bad.
But he said something once, you know, because Rajasi Janakananda would go into Samadhi when he would visit Yogananda at Encinitas, and there's a little grassy place there, and there's a picture in one of the books of him just sitting there, you know, just beaming. He would float on the ocean in what's called the fish pose. Do you know the fish pose where, you know, your legs are kind of in the lotus, and you're...
It's a yoga posture.
It's a yoga posture called the fish pose.
Matsyanasana.
That's right. And he would be in the fish pose. He'd be floating on the Pacific Ocean in Samadhi. And Yogananda would tell other people, other monks and things, "Now you go with him. You watch after him while he's out there, because, you know, I don't want him to get lost." And there he is in Samadhi in the middle of the ocean. And he always wanted people with him. He watched out for him, but he had this spiritual, amazing realization, and he had this, you know, he was a millionaire in the days when probably would be a billionaire now, I don't really know, but it would be a lot of millionaires, all wealth, and once he said in the presence of others to Janakananda, "Now, don't forget where your power comes from." And very sweetly, Janakananda looked over. Rajasi looked over, because Rajasi's what Master called. Rajasi looked over and said, sweetly, "I won't, Master, it comes from you." So he was like a little child with his guru, and so happy, you know, to serve him. And so there are, you know, people who can have both. Hopefully more and more and more of them. Mm-hmm. But Kriya Yoga is, we're going to be celebrating Lahiri Mahashaya's time when he went up into, what are we celebrating now? His birth, right?
Well, yeah, this is the
his
week that he was both born.
Today, right?
His
mom's
samadhi. Yeah, his anniversary of his death was today, and I think his birth is in 4 days. But,
mm-hmm.
And yes, we're going to be retelling the story of his trip to visit Babaji for the first
in
time.
In the Himalayas, yeah.
On Saturday
Babaji
night.
So we're going to enact it. So we've got, you know, Tandava.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in it, and several other people. So they're doing a little set in the community. It's a little play that they're doing. And so somebody's going to play Babaji, and somebody's going to play Lahiri and go up and, you know, just sort of act it out. And we're all looking forward to it, because it's nice to remember. And to imagine that time when Babaji in the Himalayas, this amazing master, calls Lahiri, who was just a little accountant, and says, "Remember, boom, boom, here's your Kriya initiation." And he spent how many days in Samadhi with
four
Babaji
or five
then?
Anyway.
Some number of days in Samadhi, and he didn't want to go back.
Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
What the numbers?
I almost
think it
was seven.
It was also in the movie Awakening.
Yeah, it would have been in the
yeah.
movie too.
It might have been 7 days. I don't remember.
Not exactly sure.
But anyway, from my imagination, I go, "Okay, there I am. I'm here. I'm meeting Babaji. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be back. You remembered me. I get Kriya Yoga initiation. I go into Samadhi. I'm with my guru." That's it. Never wanted anything else. And then the guru says, Lahiri, time for you to go back. You know, first Lahiri says, well, can I share this with other people? This is really great. I really love this. And Maharaj said, well, you can share it with people who are ready to renounce everything in the world and just focus. And Lahiri's a householder now. He has a wife and children, a lot of friends. He goes, well, you know, what about all those other people? Don't you think they could also have Kriya? Ah, Divine Mother has spoken through you. Go and share it with anyone who is sincere. So that opened the gates for all of us in this new age to have this technique, which is quite precious and used to be guarded way up in the Himalayas, only to those souls who were ready to give up everything. And it's a new age, so we're supposed to have it and live it.